speak in the name of God, the lover, the beloved, and the love sharer. Amen. Those of you who were here 2 weeks ago will recall that I quoted from The Rings of Power, Tolkien's unpublished manuscript, which his son Christopher later published after his father's death in Unfinished Tales. And I was recalling a conversation in which Elrond, one of the High Elves, recalling the words of his father, said, "The way of the faithful is committing to pay the price, even if the cost cannot be known, trusting that in the end it will be worth it. Though the cost is dear, we have little choice but to keep serving." If we really take the implications of these words to heart, the prospect for Christian service in the world is truly awe-inspiring. Elrond's words triggered another cinematic memory for me, that this time of that delightful movie, The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, in which the hapless manager, Sonny Kapoor, played by the very talented British Indian actor Dev Patel, exclaimed, "Everything will be all right in the end. And if it's not all right, then it's not yet the end." And these quotations are what I call watchwords for our current deeply troubled times. Watchwords are like spiritual points on a compass. Paying close attention to our spiritual watchwords shows us the way forward when the familiar signposts of stability and continuity on which we once relied are no longer visible, or even more worrying, remain visible but now misdirect through disinformation to point us in the opposite direction from the one we should set out on. And misdirectional signposts lead us into the dark places of the past rather than forward into the promise of the future. Back to the future is another watchword, but this one we need to be wary of. Back to the future is really a statement about the prospect of our future being only a repetition of the worst aspects of our past. It's another way of saying that society seems incapable of learning from the past collective memory. Part of this explanation is that we have become a society characterized by amnesia. Our memory span is so short, we've forgotten the most important lessons from our past. Even our recent past. And I've quoted to you many times before Freud's axiom, that which we cannot remember, we are destined to repeat. And one of the sad lessons from our collective past resurfaces in the way that autocratic and anti-democratic tendencies, always latent in our collective unconscious, return to the surface. We see this so clearly when we survey the international scene, whether it be Putin's Russia, Xi Jinping's China, Iran's Ayatollahs. The infantile omnipotence of autocrats dictating the course of nations through a steady ahistorical diatribe of perceived grievance. And we in America know firsthand the autocratic and anti-democratic impulses resurfacing from our own history. And as we approach the midterms, an article in the Atlantic Daily summed up our situation entitled "More Than the Price of Gas," maybe some of you have seen it, by Tom Nichols, in which he notes that voting dictated by hot-button issues of the moment not only corrodes our democracy, but in the long run leads us nowhere new. He writes, "Voters concerned about democracy should remind their fellow citizens that the GOP majority will not fix the economy or face down the Russians." Now, in our first lesson this morning from the prophet Habakkuk, he's one of the minor prophets. We refer to the minor prophets not because they're unimportant, but because their books are rather short. And he's writing in a time of national emergency, either around or soon after the destruction of Jerusalem in 587. It's helpful for us to situate the office of the prophet as an antidote in ancient Israel to the authoritarian centralization of power in the king. Israel had a constitution. It was called the covenant. And it was the prophet's role to remind those in power of its constraints on autocracy. Brother Garrett Galvin of the Orders of the Friars Minor writes about this reading and notes, "Part of the prophet's job was to reflect on the world as it is rather than predicting the future, as is so often misattributed to prophets. Habakkuk demonstrates facing up to the challenges of the time." He writes, "The one who lives by faith must encounter many others who choose to live by a different standard. And the necessity of living by faith does not always produce a comfortable life." Habakkuk understood that the cure for the deep-seated corruption of power required a dramatic restoration of covenant values. What worried him was he also understood that any restoration must first be preceded by a collapse. Using the analogy from computers, Habakkuk could be understood to realize that Judah's need for a reset to factory settings. Yet, he laments the cure possibly being worse than the disease. And in the reading we heard him cry, "How long shall I cry for help? You will not listen. I cry to you violence, and you will not save." And in the following verse, he chronicles the nation's woes in a voice that sounds remarkably contemporaneous. "Destruction and violence are before me. Strife and contention arise. So the law becomes slack, and justice never prevails." And in response, he simply commits himself to a principled stand, not running away or shirking his responsibility. He proclaims, "I will stand at my watchpost and station myself on the rampart." And God finally answers Habakkuk by reminding him, "For there is still a vision for the appointed time. It speaks of the end and does not lie. If it seems to tarry, wait for it. It will surely come when the righteous live by their faith." Taking up our responsibilities, we must stand on the metaphorical ramparts of democracy. That through faithful service, no matter the cost, we remain steadfast because we can do no other. There is a cost. And as Brother Garrett Galvin reminds us, that the one who lives by faith, confronting those who choose to live by a different standard, will not always produce a comfortable life. Now, I believe that the troubles of our present time are signs of the beginning of a divine reset, a return to our original factory settings as creatures made in the image of an all-loving creator. And our having failed to live by faith in the goodness of God in creation is the cause of all our current challenges, from the pandemic to the collapse of economic globalism, with the knock-on consequences of the breakdowns in the supply chains feeding our rampant consumerism, spiraling prices and inflation, and of course the resurfacing of old grievances, leading societies back into the cul-de-sacs of history from which no meaningful solutions emerged last time we found ourselves here. Finally, God is saying to us, enough is more than enough. Failure of systemic reform is now inevitably leading us towards the uncomfortable experience of a massive worldwide recalibration. And as Habakkuk recognized in Catastrophe, what I'm preferring to call recalibration is the necessary precondition for reset. And if we find the cost of paying the price in defense of democracy's freedoms, simply consider the alternative of folding in the face of tyranny's insatiable violence, whether facing down a Putin or a Trump and their legions of orcs. Together we must stand in solidarity with the Ukrainian people, who are forging a new future for themselves, even as they bear the brunt of the anti-democratic onslaught of Putin's tyranny. Americans must raise our heads to look beyond the immediate grimness of gas prices at the pump, the effects of inflation on the supermarket shelves. Europeans must raise their heads to look beyond the grimness of this winter's massive energy crisis. We in the West, by which I mean the global network of free democracies in which government is based on the rule of law, must not let our immediate discomforts misdirect us from the longer-term direction of travel. We must keep faith that everything will be all right in the end. And if it is not all right at the moment, then it's not yet the end. We hold fast. The cost may be high, but the reset has begun. And it will be worth it in the end. Amen.